Midnight in Karachi with Mavish Marad on tour.com.
My guest today is fantasy novelist Daniel Polansky, whose latest is the tour.com novella The Builders, which is about a group of characters led by one fierce captain who gathered them again years after a terrible defeat so that they may wreak revenge. Oh, and all the characters are animals. Their captain is a mouse. I'm not afraid of mice, but I'm a little bit afraid of this one. It's a great story of adventure and loyalty and all sorts of hijinks. Daniel is also the writer of the Lowdown trilogy and those above. Daniel, welcome to Midnight in Karachi. It's so great to have you here.
Thanks a lot for having me. I really appreciate it.
So now let's start off with The Builders, which is out in a couple of weeks. Tell me, please, where did the story and the premise come from? Or why animals?
Yeah, you know, it's sort of a funny thing. I wrote the first bit of The Builders many years ago, actually, right before Lowtown sold. And it just kind of came to me. I'm a big fan of, you know, those kinds of, nasty sorts of westerns, Peckinpah and that kind of thing. And, I guess I just like the idea of taking such a sort of dark, nasty kind of premise and then, you know, doing something kind of faintly lighthearted in terms of having the animals, but not tongue-in-cheek, you know. No one's ever winking at the sort of audience. It's just like, these are mean animals doing mean things. And as far as why animals, there are a lot of reasons, I guess, but probably the main one would be it sort of allows for a certain kind of over-the-top prose style, that maybe if you were doing it with people would be, you couldn't pull it off, it would be a little too silly, but with animals you're like, oh, ha-ha, they just killed a bunch of rats, that's kind of funny.
That was it? That's kind of fun?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I just really liked the idea. It really kind of captivated me, more so than probably other things I've written. It just came really simply. And then, because novellas are sort of prior to this cool thing tour.com is doing, you know, they're tough to sell. It was really just something that I kind of wrote for personal pleasure. I so enjoyed having it and sort of doing the story myself. And I'm really happy that it can be shared with the world.
Was it written quite a while before it was sold?
Yeah, you know, I think probably obviously there were some edits, you know, once it got picked up, but the bulk of it, I mean, you know, I had a draft of this sitting on my hard drive maybe 2.5 years ago, something like that, you know, without ever having any expectation of it selling, just because I thought it was funny. I would look at it every so often and laugh.
Now, was there ever a point you thought you'd write the story with people during the course of the writing, during the course of the editing, you know, boring, regular human sort, the people we don't like, those people?
No, I mean, I think the first thing that came to me was the first chapter, just the idea of writing about this mouse entering a bar. For me, the idea of them being animals was always sort of inextricably intertwined with the rest of the narrative. There also are some, you know, it's a short book. Obviously, it's a novella. There are a lot of characters, and so having them be animals, that also helps insofar as it kind of anchors the reader's attention. Instead of having eight characters introduced within the first 30 pages, and you're like, who are these folk? You're going, okay, right, it's the salamander, it's the badger. You know, it's easier to kind of hang your mind on.
What was the process like writing a novella? This is your first novella. I know you've done short stories before. I know, of course, you've done novels.
I don't know that it was that much different. I mean, it's easier because you have less plot to work with. You don't have to, it's there's just less to sort of do on that end. And then, of course, because it's smaller, you can really hammer at the language for, more in depth than if the book was 120,000 or 130,000 words, which is another really fun thing about writing novellas. Actually, I really loved writing this. Novellas are a lot of fun to write, so I'm really happy that there's this forum now to release them.
Now, I wanted to talk about the naming of some of these characters, Bonsoir and Cinnabar and Boudica and, you know, Gertrude. I love the names. They were these big, heavy names, some of them for these small, fierce creatures. What was your naming process like? Was there a lot of thought behind it? Did they sort of come naturally to you? This may sound like a silly question, but, you know, names are important.
Sure. No, it's not a silly question at all, and I wish I had a better answer. You know, to be honest, nothing with the builders came that hard. You know, I don't know why, but it was just, maybe it was because I'm cribbing from so many things that I have such love and affection for, so many different sources. But everything came really naturally, came really easy. I don't know why. I mean, the naming of these things just was fun and kind of easy. I wish I had like a better, more intricate explanation for how they all came about, but basically I'd just be kind of going through this and then I would come up with a name and then laugh for a while and that would be the name.
That's a good enough reason, I suppose.
It's not a very good reason, I'm sorry. I wish I had a better one.
I actually think it's a pretty good reason. If it makes you laugh, I mean, why is that not a good enough reason?
No, it's a good reason, but it's not an interesting answer to a question. I don't know. Some, like I said, you know, some of the, there's other things that I've written that, you know, really were much more of a struggle. This was, The Builders was really something. It really was a labor of love. All of the stuff I write is to some degree, but I can't remember many things that I just enjoy writing as much as The Builders.
Now, I hear you love killing your characters. Is this true?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, no, I do, as you can clearly see. Really, all of my books are fairly evident in that. I like murdering them. So there's, you know, it's a running theme in all of my books, I would say.
Is it going to stay that way, you think?
You know, I have one book where not everyone dies, But I would say,
how cheerful point, that must be!
I know. It was really out of character for me. It's a good way to avoid having people ask you to write sequels.
Now, you're a fan of Hammett and Chandler. You do write noir. What's the most important thing that you've taken away as far as storytelling and writing go from classic noir novelists like Hammett, like Raymond Chandler?
That's a good question. You know, those guys, the sort of mid-century American noir writers, they were so good at doing a lot with very little. Where you just in a couple of words can give your reader everything that you need to tell them about the characters. That's definitely something. I mean, the idea of revealing a lot of information through dialogue, and not having that dialogue be elaborately explained by kind of, you know, he said angrily, or explanations of their thought process, where you're just presenting the reader with a fairly basic set, you know, with a clear, sharp set of information and expecting them to kind of go from there. I mean, I guess, you know, in a sentence, it would just be the sort of sharpness of that language and to narrow what you're saying down to a really, to a real point.
Yeah, I think that's my favorite kind of tone or favorite kind of narrative is that kind of taut writing, that kind of really tightly structured and very sort of, you want to say bare bones, but it's not really. It's just, it does cut a lot of the fat away.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And, you know, also the idea of having a protagonist that's almost, this is less so probably in this book, but having a protagonist that is almost like a cipher. And, you know, I mean, when Marlowe is introduced in the Chandler novels, it's just like one sentence, you know.
Yeah.
It's just like, I'm Philip Marlowe, I'm a private detective. And then, you know, by the end of the book, you feel like you know this character a lot more, not because he's providing you insight into his motivations or his thought process or his history, because we learn almost nothing about his background. And I mean, for Hammett, you know, the Continental Lot doesn't even have a name, right? He's just not the Continental Lot. But, you know, you see through their actions and through their behavior, you get a sense of their personality and their moral structure, and as well as the viewpoint, their view of the world, as opposed to you know, other sorts of writing where there's, like, you know, endless description of the thought process or, you know, they're hammering home, you know, to the reader more clearly what the person is thinking.
Who were some of your other literary heroes when you were growing up?
Oh, gosh. You know, when I was growing up, I was a big sort of epic fantasy fan. I'm not sure how many of those really have stuck with me. It's a funny thing because a lot of the people that I find that I like the most, you know, if I was to name my 5 or 10, you know, favorite writers, I don't know that I write very much like any of them, probably because most of them are much, much smarter and more talented than I am. So it's strange. I mean, you have a lot of people where you're like, this guy's really a genius, but I can't emulate him. I just recently read, I'm a huge Gene Wolfe fan. I just recently wrote this thing for Tor about Peace, which I think is his masterpiece. And it's one of these things where you're reading it and thinking like, well, I'll never write that, you know? But I mean, you know, growing up, I mean, in terms of the genre, obviously everyone is a big, you know, fan of Martin and reasonably so. I really like Gene Wolfe, you know, as I mentioned again. Yeah, those would be two of the guys that I'm mad about. And then, you know, there'd be 10 other people that I can't really touch language-wise.
Were you always going to be a writer?
No, I wasn't one of those people that, like, when they were 12, they were like, I'm going to be a writer when I grow up. But I read a ton. I was always sort of reading obsessively, and so that kind of went narrowly into it. But I didn't take any classes for it. You know, I wasn't, like, a creative writing major in college or what have you. You know, it was sort of something I fell into. That's kind of a silly way to put it. But, you know, when I started writing Lowtown, I was like, wow, I really love doing this. I really like doing this more than I like doing anything else that I've done. And, you know, I should try to keep doing it if I can.
So in this day and age of digital music, I believe you still collect vinyl.
I do. I have far too many records. I'm staring at them right now. Yeah, they're really fun to have spinning around in a corner while you're hanging about. They're not as fun to move apartments, though. I collected a lot of them when I was sort of younger, before I started traveling. And like many possessions, you start feeling like, boy, I don't know why I own literally 40 or 50 pounds of these.
What are the few records you've gone most out of your way to find? And do you then listen to music only on vinyl? Because, I mean, is that even possible? There are all these things like FLAC files floating around on
right.
the ether.
No, I mean, I you know, I have an iPod and walk around, you know, bumping that. When I was really, you know, it slowed down some, but when I was really into collecting records, what are a couple? I have a record by Masta Ace, who's this great New York rapper from back in the day that took me forever to find. There's a great sort of old folky named Karen Dalton. I have an original pressing of her LP. I don't know how I got that. You know, it's nothing for me. I mean, it's not. I collect them to play. You know, I don't really have a. They're not like boxed up or, you know, neatly sealed. I don't really understand the point of that. You know, I just. But it is cool to have these things that are sort of. Beautiful both, you know, in terms of the sound and then kind of the aesthetic. You can hold it up and look at them and you're like, gosh, this looks so pretty, and someone else held this when, you know, before me. The similar thing to buying a used book, you know, when you
right.
open it up and you see the inscription in the front and you're like, oh, I guess Joe broke up with Jane at some point because she gave away this book he gave him.
Which is silly because, you know, why blame the books just because she broke
right.
up with him?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know, if you had a book that someone gave you, you know, that you were really intimately tied to, then I guess maybe, you know, it's part of the breakup process. But personally, I'm completely incapable of giving away books. It's a real character flaw. But I can't do it once I own a book. Even if I don't like it, I can't really give it away.
That could cause more trouble when moving houses, Daniel.
Yes, I know that. Believe me, I have.
You suffered this, yeah.
For the moving men last August when they came in, and I was like, yeah, I have a one bedroom and I have 3 bedrooms worth of books. So have fun moving those.
All right, now earlier today I was told by 2 people that Daniel has been everywhere in the world. Is that true? I mean, it's not true because you haven't been here, as we, you know, realized
no.
earlier. But still, I won't hold that against you. What's with all the travel? Is that something you've just always been doing?
You know, I love travel. It's you know, I love backpacking and kind of wandering aimlessly. After I wrote Lowtown, that was pretty much all I did for a couple of years. I haven't been to Karachi. And you paint such a beautiful picture.
I know.
I'll have to make a visit. No, I mean, I love traveling. To sort of be in some, you know, sort of far flung corner of the world where you can't speak the language and no one knows who you are. And it's just you in a backpack looking at strange things and, you know, wandering through the dust. That's kind of my idea of paradise.
All right, so what are you working on now that The Builders is about to be released into the wild? I know there's a special edition of it, but you're obviously done with the writing of it. Have you moved on to something new?
Sure. I mean, I'm the sort of person who, if I don't write a few thousand words a day, I get very grim. So I always am doing things. What am I working on right now? Actually, I'm sort of, at the moment, the last few weeks, I've been working on this sort of spiritual sequel to The Builders, not in the same world or with the same characters, but another kind of violent animal-based book, although this one sort of more in the gang, kind of riffing off The Warriors and some Jorge Amado books that I've read. Apart from that, I just finished edits on Those Below, which should come out next February. And then I have other projects that I think I may have to keep a secret right now, or my agent will yell at me.
Hey, so what's up with elves? Aren't they the worst?
Elves are the worst. I don't care for elves on a number of levels. They got those pretentious pointy ears. They're walking around like they're better than you. They live in trees. If you happen to, you know, like throw a piece of trash out on the lawn, they like give you this really bitchy look. No, I don't like elves, and I don't like people who like elves. I honestly don't really understand why modern fantasy has developed in such a way where you can kind of just wholesale thieve from Tolkien's like toolkit and then like slap a new world on the front of it and keep going. So I'm not mad about elves, as you have pointed out.
Are you ever going to write about elves again?
No, I don't know why I wrote about elves and Those Above, really. I would be very surprised if I ever have another elf in a book, or, you know, a dwarf or any of the kind of conventional sorts of things. I just feel like, I don't really even understand what's the fun about it. Don't you want to make up your own stuff? Isn't that kind of the point of working in the genre?
So who are, or what are some of your favorite, cliched fantasy genre, you know, tropes or characters or... Other than elves,
I guess I would say like it's weird to me the like race weapon pairings, you know, where it's like all dwarves use axes. I don't know. I mean, also orcs. How did that? I mean, didn't Tolkien literally invented that word? I don't understand how people can keep writing about orcs. Isn't that kind of cheating? Can you explain that to me?
I don't know. Why is Scientology?
I don't know.
See what I mean? See what I mean? These are just things we don't know, Daniel. We just don't know these things. Why is Scientology? Why is Kale? What even is Kale? I don't even know what Kale is.
Don't get me started about Kale. I live in Brooklyn. My entire life is Kale related.
In my head, Kale is like Scientology seaweed. Or lettuce. Is that true? I live in Karachi. What do I know?
Do you not have a lot of kale in
Karachi? We have zero kale in Karachi. We don't know what kale is. Well, no. Some people import some stuff and then some grocers, and very expensive grocers, and they say it's kale. But, you know, honestly, how do I know?
Right.
I have no idea. I have no frame of reference.
No. Kale is... I pretty much only eat red meat. It's very healthy. So I don't... Kale is like a leafy green vegetable that... people who don't like to eat, like pork belly and cheeseburgers like I do seem to be really crazy about. I don't really understand the appeal, but if I say that too loudly, then like a mob of Brooklyn hipsters will kick down my door and kill me. So maybe, you know, be quiet on that one.
Someone did just ring your doorbell, the bit we edited out.
That's true.
Preemptively,
that's true.
Right?
That's
someone
true.
They, new,
they, yeah. They sensed I was going to speak ill of Kale, and they got ready to attack.
That's how strong this Kale connection is. They can sense it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, like, I mean, Scientology, they do have the, you know, like, the people who come for you if you say bad things about Scientology, but the Kale mob is way, way more dangerous.
I will keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
I think we might have more Scientologists in Karachi than we have Kale, but, you know, it's a close call.
Are there Scientologists in Karachi?
Yes, there are.
Really?
Yeah, it's a weird thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you about that off air. Let's go back to some more questions that we have via Twitter. John Brazier asks, would you ever consider a more in-depth origins book for the Warden?
No. No, I don't know. I sort of feel like the Warden, I mean, the three books do a pretty decent job of painting out his sort of broad life history. I feel like I probably have said everything that I wanted to say with the warden, and occasionally, I mean, the voice, his voice came so kind of easy to me, and he was fun to write. Sometimes I think about writing a novella or something short, but basically I feel like how many times do you really want to go back to the same well? And I liked the way it ended, you know, and I also, I guess we can basically blame this whole prequel thing on Lucas, but I really don't understand it. You know, it's like you already know how the actual story ends. You've already written what you feel to be the most interesting part of the story. So it's like, what's so important? You know, you know Vader gets friggin', you know Vader dies. Why do you care what he was doing before he put on the mask, you know? So similarly, I probably feel like I did enough with the whole Lowtown world. I don't have a burning desire to go back to it.
All right, next question from Paul, who says, I associate Daniel with low. I'm making quotation marks here. You can't see me, but I am.
Okay.
With low fantasy instead of high epic fantasy. What drew you to write the former?
It's not, you like the things you like at a certain point. That's not as an easy question to answer as maybe it should be. I guess I would say a lot of the kind of larger tropes of high fantasy don't interest me. The very, very long books and these, you know, the kind of hero's journey sort of things. I like harder hitting, you know, kind of nastier sorts of worlds. Yeah, but I mean, really, it's just like we like what we like, don't we? I mean, some people like kale. We've already established. We don't know why, but some people do. I don't like kale, but I do like low fantasy. That just seems to be the way my mind works. That's what I dream about. You don't really know. You don't have that much control over you know, what your inclinations are.
Third question from Rob. In writing The Builders, how much of the inspiration was books like Redwall, or did your vision for this come from somewhere else?
Certainly, you know, I'm cribbing from that in terms of the idea of like the fully anthropomorphic animals more or less living out a sort of straight human existence, but on a smaller scale. But I would say probably most of the things that I was cribbing from would be, you know, as I said earlier, like these sort of hardcore Western, Sergio Leone and Peckinpah. It would probably more be that I was inspired by the sort of books and films about humans doing these kinds of violent things, and then painted the sort of Western patina onto it.
So what's next for you? What's immediately next for you? What are you up to now? What are you up to when we stop recording?
Literally when we stop recording? I am going to go for a long walk and write 1,000 words. I'm going to finish reading The Perfume by Patrick Susskind, which is a lot of fun. The weather is really nice in New York right now, so I'm going to enjoy some of that. I would say nothing really fascinating. I'm going to go eat a tub of kale.
You have some for me too, okay?
Okay, I will eat twice as much kale for you.
Good stuff. Can you tell me all about it afterwards?
I will. I'll write you a really long, detailed description of like the tongue feel of kale.
You could totally write a novella about kale.
You could write the worst novella ever.
What are you writing right now? Can you talk about it? That's what I'm getting at with all these questions.
What am I writing right now? I mean, I have like 4 or 5 projects that I'm kind of trying to figure out what's going to be my next sort of big thing. I have a bunch of stuff coming out next year. I'm really enjoying writing this sort of a Builder's pseudo sequel. I have a crime novel that I'm polishing. I don't really know what the next big thing is going to be for me. There's this kind of mean young adult thing I'm picking at. But I'm sort of in between projects. I wish I had a more concrete answer for you.
That's okay. You can come up with one next time.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. So hopefully we'll speak to you again whenever the next book is out.
I'd very much like to do that. Thank you so much for having me.